Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Journey into Comics with your hosts, Nate Phillips and Brandon Stone.
I am a god, you dull creature.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How is everybody doing? Take a seat. Sit back, relax. It's time for Journey into Comics. I'm your host, Nate Phillips. Today is, in fact, NateCast. It is Sunday, the 18th of January, which means that we totally forgot about it, and I didn't post anything because I had a day off. But on Thursday, Journey into Comics celebrated its first year as a podcast. How fun. And it's been a great year. We'll get into that here in a little bit. To start the show off, I just wanted to wish my little sister, Taylor, a very happy 15th birthday by the time this comes out. She will have turned 15. Remember the day that she was born like yesterday. It was really, really blizzardy. It was awful. I was 13. There was so much snow on the ground. We had to drive an hour to the hospital where she was born. It was a mess. But it was great because I got a cool little sister out of it. And I already had a cool little sister because Sam is my other little sister and she's a total badass. And then Taylor is my other little sister and she's also a total badass. And I'm so proud of both of them. So let's move right along. I just want to really quickly take a little retrospective look back at some of the points that I thought were amazing about 2014 for Journey into Comics. To start, Journey into Comics' first episode, the Repilot, ended up on Josh Figures It Out as a part of the first ever Incepticast. Now, if you aren't familiar with an Incepticast or Josh Figures It Out, Josh Figures It Out is a show, was a show, now it's called Accept the Mystery, which I think is fitting. But Josh Figures It Out was a show, a podcast, that was on every Wednesday, and Josh Richmond, a buddy of mine, was the host, and he would talk and bring on guests and have points, but he had said, hey, if anybody wants to send me a podcast, I'll put your podcast inside of my podcast, and then we'll interview and talk. I was the only person that really stepped up, and Josh called me up, and he said, hey, do you want to be a part of this? And I said, yeah, sure, let's do it. So he interviewed me, and it was a lot of fun. So if you go to joshfiguresitout.podbean.com, and I don't know, it was probably episode 5 or 6, I would say, maybe 7, I don't really remember. It's way down there, though, because he's since done the, like I said, he switched his show to Accept the Mystery, and it's, you know, it's great that he had me on. He interviewed me, we talked, I was still very timid, and was still learning how to be a podcast guy, and I did the interview, and then went on a hiatus, and didn't record another podcast until April, and then that's when things kind of started changing. April rolled around, and we started to kind of, I thought, build some steam. I was reviewing movies, and talking about, you know, the things that were to come and what was going on with Journey into Comics and all things in comics, all things in movies, all things in The Walking Dead and Star Wars and the Marvel Cinematic Universe and DC's universe and, you know, how amazing Guardians of the Galaxy was going to be. And then I thought, you know, there's a guy I know who I would love to talk with about what he collects and does in his life, and our similarities with what we love are striking. So I said, you know, Brando, he's my now co-host, do you want to come on the show, be interviewed, we'll talk about how you collect video games, and then from there we can just kind of see where the relationship takes us. And we decided that it was going to be awesome to just have him on full time. Now, a part of having Brandon on full time was kind of figuring out the scheduling, and so to start we were kind of rocky. We didn't record for 3 weeks, and then we would record a show, and then we wouldn't record for 1 week, and we recorded 2 shows in a week. So we wanted to try to get that balanced out. Along the way, before we got that all balanced out, we started to bring on our own friends and guests to the show. We had Wes Westicles in quite a few episodes. He was in both the Baller Minutia Saga Part 1 and 2. He was a part of I Am Taco. He was a part of the Cards Against Humanity episode, which was great, and we'll get to that later. Silent Rob has been in several episodes, Adventures in Game Hunting, again, Baller Minutia Saga, I Am Taco. Sometimes you think he maybe Silent Rob has been on other shows, and we aren't going to tell you. That's part of the mystery of our show. We had Matt, who is one of our ghost hunting guys, on with us to go over some different evidence of things we had come up with, which we did an awesome ghost hunting episode. I forgot all about that, where we talked about the ghost hunt we went on in Rossville. And then recently, Brandon brought on his buddies Mike and Nick. What's up, guys? Decoy Octopus. Gotcha again, fucker. Anyways, sorry, Nick. I hope Nick is like, you motherfucker. Why did you do that? If I fucking see you, don't punch my face when you see me. Don't punch my face. Anyways, I want to have all these guys on again. And actually, me and Brando have kind of loosely discussed the possibility of just bringing all these guys together, and including a couple of my friends who are eventually, hopefully, Anthony Schoen, going to end up on Journey into Comics and be able to talk, because I've got some friends who are really knowledgeable in the comic book and toy world, and I would love to just have them on to sit and chit-chat. And, is everything okay? I was just startled. Okay, great. Anyways, so, you know, we had those things happening, had our guests on and our friends, and then we decided we really needed to desperately move to the weekly thing. And we were trying to figure out how we're going to do this. It's so hard to get our schedules in syncopation with each other. What are we going to do to successfully give you guys, our listeners, the most amount of content that we could possibly give? And I said, Brandon, I have it. I'll do a solo cast, and then we'll have a normal show together, and then you'll do a solo cast, and we'll switch on and off, and it'll be great. A solo cast is still just a podcast, but it's one half of the tandem, which this is a solo cast tonight, ladies and gentlemen, Nate Cast solo cast. So it's just me tonight, and then next week, Brandon and I are going to come on together again, and we're going to chat and do a normal show like we do, and it's going to be amazing, and, you know, maybe next week, we don't know, we're still fleshing this out, maybe next week we'll do our Civil War debate, we don't know, we're still trying to plan how all of this is going to go. And then the end of the year started to wind down, and we had got really on the systematic role of being weekly, and we really implemented the weekly thing in October. I think we pumped out like 5 or 6 episodes in October, which was insane. I mean, the sheer amount of recording we were doing was pretty crazy. I mean, I do remember there was one podcast, and I you guys probably have to look on your own. We recorded the podcast in the morning while I was in Studio A, which is the original studio in Hoopston where I do record at Pop's recording studio. And then I drove home 2 hours, waited several hours, and then me, Brandon, and Matt did the ghost hunting episode late into the evening, early morning. So we recorded 2 episodes in one day, which was like 4 hours of radio, I guess you'd say. This isn't really radio, but it seems like podcasts are starting to become the future. People are turning to podcasts to kind of get more personal, really. You want to listen to something where people are going to be talking about things you care about. I don't want to sit and listen to fucking Rush Limbaugh babble on for 20 hours about some stupid political bullshit that no one cares about. And I'm sure you guys don't either. That's why you're listening to Journey into Comics. This podcast is not for anybody else but you. Whoever you are right now listening, take a second, take a deep breath, look around. Life, hopefully for you, is going pretty well. This podcast, from us to you.
And the Oscar goes to
Journey into Comics for being fucking amazing. Anyways, so the end of the year was coming up, and it's getting close to Christmas time, and we had planned it. We were going to release our Cards Against Humanity holiday bullshit episode, where me, Silent Rob, Westicles, and Brando played Cards Against Humanity. And it was a great time, and it was a lot of fun. So we released that, and we thought it was really good, so I just want to, maybe we've already talked about this. You guys, my brain doesn't work so good, but Brandon and myself have decided that we're going to probably do a couple more Cards Against Humanity episodes this year and put them randomly. So there might be an episode where you think we're going to be on next week, and if there's nothing to really report, well, we're not going to report anything. We'll just give you some funny shit to listen to. I think that's a better way to go, right? I mean,
I'm Batman.
Yeah, Batman, I get it. I totally get it. I'm having too much fun with the buttons tonight, guys.
And it's gone.
You have failed this city.
Fucking Oliver Queen. I'm so excited. Holy shit. I don't even have it on my list. I was a really responsible adult and decided that I was going to plan out the podcast really in detail and no talking points. I want to be the best I can for you guys. I'm tired of just kind of lounging about and being lazy and lackadaisical with the show. I want to be on point, on topic, and on task. There's a fucking train. I don't know if you guys can hear that, but there's definitely a fucking train. We hate trains. So anyways, we're going to be planning more big stuff. Look for 2015 to be really special for Journey into Comics as we continue our journey into the podcasting world, into your ears, into your friends' ears. Make sure to like us on Facebook. I know that some of you maybe have some sort of aversion to going on Facebook and clicking like, but it takes literally like 4 fucking seconds. We will appreciate it. We'll appreciate you even more. And I promise you, I'm being serious now, we can't do any of this without you guys. You guys are our listeners. We want to have more listeners. We want you to be able to go, hey, Joe Schmo, did you fucking check out last week's episode? Well, fuck yeah, those guys are fucking pretty funny. That was really good. It's more banter. It's more ways to converse. In a world where you pick up your fucking cell phone and you text whoever you want and you say whatever the fuck you want and you send a dick pic to some random fucking girl, whatever. The point is, people need to converse again. We are in a world where you're not talking to your fellow man enough. The downfall of society will not be bombs dropping. It's already happening because no one talks to each other anymore. You go into a lobby of a place and people are just fucking... I'm sitting here acting like I'm on my fucking cell phone. I could actually get my cell phone out. This is... okay, this is... I'll sincerely do what people do. Ready? Okay, so see, that was way too much radio silence, but that's like how it is everywhere you go. People aren't talking anymore, and we need to change that. We want to be a catalyst for change. We want you to go to the water cooler and be like, man, Nate brought up some pretty fucking good points last night on Journey into Comics. I don't know if you checked the episode out, but you really should. And I don't want people to be... I think maybe people have some negative stigma towards the word comics. You have to understand, and maybe explain to your friends, we're not here just to speak about comic books. We talk about video games, movies, music, life in general. There are so many things that go on in our world, and we just want to be an open conversation. We want to bring up good points. We want people to think about what we're talking about and have their own discussions and debates. When Brandon and I sit and discuss things, he'll be like, hey, do you think this is, you know, a good... you think this movie's going to be worth it? And then I have to say my opinion. But my opinion doesn't mean dick. Neither does Brandon's opinion. Sorry, Brandon, but it's the truth. Your opinion is the only opinion that should matter to you. And you shouldn't care what I think. I think Guardians of the Galaxy was the best movie of 2014, hands down. A lot of other people are going to be like, you know, that was a decent movie, but man, there were some really other great films that really should have been number one. But they weren't great to me. They weren't movies that changed my life and made me feel fucking incredible, and I called it. I listened back to some of the older podcasts, and I was bringing up how Guardians of the Galaxy was going to be phenomenal in my first, second, third, fourth, fifth episode. I think I probably said the words Guardians of the Galaxy in every episode I've done because of how important it is to the movie universe. It is a modern day Star Wars, but I digress. Let's get on topic. So today, let's start with, we're going to talk a little bit. Henry Cavill has come out and said that he thinks Batman versus Superman will make cinematic history. And let's just, I'm going to go ahead and read the exact quote that he said. He said, it's Zack Snyder, so it's going to be visually, it's going to be a visual spectacle, and it's cinematic history. We're doing Batman, and we're doing Superman, and it's all happening at the same time. So fingers crossed it turns out to be as exciting as I think it is. And then, of course, some people asked him, well, would you give any advice to Ben Affleck playing Batman? He said, why would I give Ben Affleck any advice? It's Ben Affleck. He's a brilliant guy. He's super talented. He's one of the best actors of the 21st century, you know, hands down. So I thought that was interesting. Henry Cavill, to be quite honest, dude, I don't know that Batman v Superman is going to make cinematic history. I mean, that's a really big thing you're saying is going to happen. You know, when you put thought into the levity of those words, those are some pretty strong words you're saying. We'll see how Batman versus Superman turns out. We still don't have an official trailer. It seems months tick, tick, tick. Some people think that maybe Batman versus Superman's first trailer is going to be attached to Avengers Age of Ultron, which would be a really ballsy move for Warner Brothers and DC, putting their trailer in front of their competition. But I don't think they'd take the wind out of the sails of Marvel. They're trying to just do their own thing. They're not trying to piggyback off of each other. Marvel's doing Marvel's universe. DC's doing DC's universe. They're staying very separate. To continue on to the DC universe, let's talk about something that broke this week. Anthony pointed out to me, and I think Veronica also sent me a little link. Both of them was like, hey, did you hear? And I hadn't heard, and then I read it. Apparently, Tom Hardy has dropped out of Suicide Squad. Originally, Tom Hardy was cast as Rick Flagg, and it seems that he, for some unknown reason, decided he didn't want to be a part of the movie anymore. They made the official casting announcement, and maybe all the people going, God, Tom Hardy is Bane. Why is he Rick Flagg? That's dumb. Maybe that's what drew him to go, you know, maybe I shouldn't really fucking take this role, guys. I mean, I'm saying fuck a lot in this episode. I am sorry. This is so strange, and I'm going to tangent here in a second after I mention the studio that's doing Suicide Squad, David Ayer's the director. They're eyeing Jake Gyllenhaal to actually replace Tom Hardy as Rick Flagg in the Suicide Squad that's going to feature, you know, Jared Leto and Margot Robbie and Jai Courtney and Will Smith. So we'll see what happens. I'm sure that in the next couple weeks we'll have an official announcement of who's replacing Tom Hardy in Suicide Squad, because soon, guess what's going to have to happen? Because Suicide Squad, I think, is supposed to come out, what, late 2016, early 2017? They're going to have to start filming soon. I mean, to be quite honest. So soon we're going to have to find out who's officially going to be playing what roles. So I was going to tangent about how I cursed so much. Let's real quick talk about my upbringing. Most of you probably who've been around me know that I do not curse around my dad. And that's just how I was raised. I respect him a hell of a lot. And I try not to curse a lot of the times, unless I'm in the privacy of my own home or with close friends, that kind of thing. But this is an open forum. This is my show. This is my brainchild. And some days I just get on a roll and fuck starts rolling out of my mouth a lot. So if I'm offending you, I apologize. Maybe somewhere down the road, fuck, I will, fuck, release, fuck, a fuck censored, fuck version of my show. Fuck. There you go. Okay. So now I'm done with that. Anyways, so let's continue on to what exactly is going on in Marvel's world as far as casting is concerned, because now it's official. Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen will have nothing to do with the next X-Men movie, Apocalypse, X-Men Apocalypse. Now, that's not really a surprise, because we knew this was going to be a movie set in the 80s with the first class team. They're looking to recast Jean Grey and Cyclops to being younger mutants to be able to take on Apocalypse. And Patrick Stewart said, you know, that he's learning kind of quite a lot about the movie recently, and that it's, you know, the movie is going to be looking very much at the earlier lives of his character, so he doesn't think that they'll be making an appearance. So as of right now, they're not going to be reprising their roles, but, you know, cliffhangers and teasers, if they decide to do more. I mean, Channing Tatum is apparently going to be in X-Men Apocalypse, right? Because he's launching the Gambit movie that we haven't talked about that they officially announced is coming in 2016. I think it's like October 22nd of 2016. Gambit is coming out. Channing Tatum is Gambit. We'll see how that goes. The, you know, the man of the Cajun persuasion. So we'll see how that goes. Now, continuing on to the Marvel Universe, this is kind of maybe a little bit of a heavy Marvel episode, but I digress. Anthony Mackie, who is playing Sam Wilson, also known as Falcon, the sidekick to Captain America, has teased Captain America 3 by saying that he thinks, in his own personal opinion, And I'll read the quote right now. First of all, he mentions that he's going to have a brand new costume, so it's not going to be that dark drab. Maybe we'll see him in the white and the red. That would be really fucking cool. But he says, I have a brand new costume. I'm full in effect. I will tell you this. Cap 3 is going to be everything you can imagine, which is pretty fucking hard to imagine because there's a lot of stuff I'm hoping happens in Captain America 3. Spider-Man being a part of it is one of those things, and I just don't know that that's actually going to work out. But Anthony Mackie continues on with Cap 2 was really Avengers 1.5. Okay, I can see that. He also says Cap 3 is going to be Avengers 3.8. Time out. How can Cap 3 be Avengers 3.8 when it's going to only come out after Avengers 2, Age of Ultron? So does that mean that he's saying that essentially Captain America 3 takes place after Infinity War? Or in between the Infinity Wars? I'm not sure. Why didn't he say 2.5? I think that would have been the better way to say this. But I digress. You know, Anthony Mackie played that role so fucking great, too. I mean, he was just, oh, hey, sorry, folks. Did not realize that was going to make noise. I was clicking my password in to get back to my buttons to do this.
Fuck off!
Okay. Anyways.
Torpid time!
Okay. So, I think Anthony Mackie did a great job playing that role. I'm excited to see what the future holds, obviously. And there's a little bit more that he actually said, and I want to continue on with what Anthony Mackie was talking about. He also says, if I can get the page to load, I have most of my talking points ready, and then I, you know, found some more stuff that he said. So he says, you know, I'll tell you this, Cap 3 is going to be everything you can imagine. Cap 2 is really Avengers 1.5, and Cap 3 is going to be Avengers 3.8. He continues on by saying, it's so amazing to be a part of the Marvel Universe. It's so rare that you go into a movie, and you know the movie is going to be good, and Marvel does not settle for mediocre on any of their movies. And that is what's so great. You can go as far as you want, because they be as far as you want, because you know they are going to make it look good. I think that's really great. And then someone continued to ask him, hey, is there any chance that you'll be taking up the mantle of Captain America like Sam Wilson has recently done in the comics? And he says, my thing is, I've done one. Everybody remember, he's only done Captain America the Winter Soldier. He's done one movie. So he says, my thing is, I've only done one of these movies. I love working with Chris Evans, obviously. He is one of my closest friends, so as long as it's me and Chris playing Falcon and Cap, I'm all cool with being Falcon. Now, here's the problem, and quasi-spoiler alert, I guess I have to say that. If you haven't read Civil War, you probably want to stop the podcast now, or just don't read too much into things. Don't be taking notes of what you think I'm saying. You want to read it for yourself. It's really great. But interesting that he says that he would like to play Captain and Falcon with Chris Evans. You know, huh, weird Captain and Falcon. And Captain Falcon. Anyways, so the thing that's weird is that in Civil War, Captain America dies. I mean, that's no bullshit. Captain America dies. He is kind of a martyr for the cause. And that's, you know, why I'm on his side. Suck it, Brando. I'm kidding. So yeah, we're going to be doing that debate, and I just, you know, have to keep prodding at Brandon a little bit. So let's continue on with today's main chunkiness of today's show. In my own opinion, again, which my opinion only matters to me, shouldn't matter to you unless you like my opinion. If you like my opinion, high five. So, I'm going to do, right now, a top five. Now, in the past, I've done some top fives. I've been kind of wishy-washy, and I thought, man, I'd really like to do a top five where I'm really articulate, and I know exactly what I'm saying, and I'm full of energy, and I know that when people listen back, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, what he said, like, yeah, bitch, you know, like, Jesse, right? Breaking Bad reference. So my top five is going to be top five best Marvel comic events. So there's one little problem with me saying I'm doing a top five of Marvel's best comic events, and that's because I haven't read them all. I thought about putting Secret War on here, which Secret War, very pivotal. I mean, I will give Secret War an honorable mention, let's say, because Secret War launched the birth of Black Suit Spider-Man. It's where the symbiote originated from. I mean, it was huge, but I've not officially read the entirety of it. So I can't go in good conscience. That's going to make the list because it's awesome. So anyways, here are my top five best Marvel comic events anyways that I have read. So, number five is Secret Invasion. Now, Secret Invasion was written by Brian Michael Bendis and came out, I would say, I don't know, let me check it out here. I want to say probably 2009. Yeah, 2009. God, I'm dead on. That was fucking awesome. So anyways, you know, it's tempting to suggest that the ending, I'm sorry, my words are all over the place. Anyways, with Secret Invasion, it's tempting to suggest that ending the long-running thread of who do you trust, which was a big thing when Marvel was doing this event, you know, who is Skrull, who is not Skrull? And maybe one of these characters is an alien shapeshifter, right? Because that's what Skrull are, alien shapeshifters. You know, it's enough to make Secret Invasion an important event in and of itself. In terms of the narrative, though, and that was what I thought was interesting, it took Stark away from the position of power. And, you know, he had been in position of power and been kind of the guy who was leading the narrative of Secret Invasion leading up to that moment. And it placed everything in the hands of Norman Osborn, which was so interesting. Like, Norman Osborn, of all people, the guy that was the Green Goblin, the guy that's gone after Spider-Man, Peter Parker, the guy that his son is Harry Osborn, you know, the guy that killed Gwen Stacy, has this power. And he's heralding a period where the bad guys had actually really won. I mean, at least until they started messing everything up for themselves again, and that's a whole nother. It's weird because Norman seems to be kind of at the forefront of major comic events in Marvel's universe in one way or another. It's like he is one of the most pivotal characters, and he doesn't get enough credit. So I think that's very interesting. So if you haven't read Secret Invasion, they do have a trade paperback. It's probably like $29.99 or $19.99 now. Hell, I don't know. I know a lot of comic shops, because they don't move trades as much, do have sales, like 25% off your trade all year, you know? So if any of these really strike you as something you want to read, and I'm trying to keep myself from being spoilerific, you know, here, I'll just real quick read the back. And I'm not going to do this for every single one of them, but I am going to do this one for Secret Invasion. This is exactly verbatim what's on the back of the trade. I've got it in my hand right now. I just grabbed it. The shape-shifting alien race known as the Skrulls have secretly infiltrated every superpowered organization on Earth with one goal: full-scale invasion. Now the invasion is here. The Marvel Universe is in shambles. The Skrulls' empire plan has birthed itself into perfection. It is hero versus hero. Resurrections and reunion. Is Tony Stark a Skrull? Page after page unveils, reveal after reveal, and shocking moment after shocking moment. Brian Bendis and Lionel Yu leap off the pages of mega hit New Avengers and deliver a story that will forever alter the Marvel Universe. Expect change. And it wasn't, I mean, it kind of altered the universe, but as things go in Marvel, nothing is forever dead. So, that being said, we'll just continue on. Now, my number four, interestingly, has some kind of more powerful ties to me. Avengers versus X-Men. Now, when Avengers versus X-Men finally was announced, they were going to do a story where it was the Avengers versus the X-Men as its own event. No singularity moment. It was the, you know, the penultimate of these two amazing teams finally clashing. And I was like, holy shit, that's awesome. So I went and I, you know, ended up getting the entire variant run for the first issue of Avengers versus X-Men. So I have the 1 in 100, 1 in 200, 1 in 50, 1 in 25, the Avengers side, the X-Men side, the blank cover, the C2E2 exclusive. There's like four other ones I have. I can't remember them all. I think there's a Virgin cover variant, maybe. Maybe not. Whatever. Anyways, so, you know, why would Avengers versus X-Men be number four on my list? And aside from the death of Charles Xavier, spoiler alert, like we've never seen that one before, which, of course, you know, we've seen the death of so-and-so. Again, this is this whole resurrection over and over and over. And the criminalization of the Phoenix Five, what exactly do you think AVX achieved for the larger Marvel Universe? Well, for me, it ushered in an era where the X-Men and cosmic characters were brought further into the wider Marvel Universe, which is something that may end up being a quieter, more meaningful change to Marvel that we normally see. It's going to be a more meaningful change than what we're seeing out of most Marvel events. I mean, recently you just had Original Sin, which was really great, but we don't know how long the effects from Original Sin are going to spread into the future of Marvel. One thing I loved about AVX was the art. And another thing that was kind of interesting that people don't really give it a lot of props for is really Avengers vs. X-Men set in motion everything that needed to happen to start the Marvel Now campaign. Marvel Now was kind of like the New 52, where they relaunched all their titles and you know, new, not really new origin stories, but you know, here are the characters, here's what's going on, these are new stories, these are not necessarily the stories you're used to reading, they're still the same characters you love, but they're a little bit different. And you had titles like All New X-Men was born out of the Avengers versus X-Men event, and All New X-Men's amazing. I mean, it's great. The idea that Beast decides that the death of Charles Xavier by the hands of Cyclops is something he can't live with, so he does the only thing he knows how. He takes Reed Richards' time-traveling device, goes into the past, pulls the original X-Men, Marvel Girl, Iceman, Cyclops, himself as Beast, and... Ooh, I forgot one. Who is it? There's five, and I can't think of the fifth. Oh, Angel. Angel. He brings them to the present and essentially says, Scott, younger Scott, Scott from the 60s, your older self is going to kill Charles and you can't let that happen or something. And then really that's how it started, and then it never really got back to him fixing that problem. We don't know if that's going to be the culmination of the series where they maybe bring back Charles Xavier. We don't know what's going to happen. But it also ushered in the Uncanny X-Men, where now Scott Summers has his own team of X-Men that have been popping up all over the globe, and he's trying to be kind of a, not a martyr for the mutants, but he's trying to be a symbol of hope. You might have powers, and you might be looked at as some sort of criminal, but I'm here to help you, and I want you to join my team and make things better, and as a team, I can train you, just like he's essentially taking over the role of Charles Xavier. At the same time, he's fucking everything up. And I think it's great. If you haven't read Avengers vs. X-Men, get your asses to it. Again, it's a trade. I do believe CM Punk might have wrote the foreword for that. CM Punk is also writing the Thor number one annual that's coming out soon. So keep that in mind, that those are things you need to be looking for. Moving on. Now, when I decided to come up with this list on my own, I had jotted down quite a few titles and just kind of space cadetting, thinking about some of the ones I have read. And not thinking about everything that I have read, you know, so I had to really kind of get into it and figure out what all have you read. And my friend Kate, who lives in Canada, hi Kate in Canada, a mishap hazardous, told me, she's like, well, is House of M on the list? And I was like, oh shit, I forgot all about House of M. It's like one of the best stories that's ever happened. I mean, it really, again, was one of the Marvel events that set in motion this great change that was unseen before it came out. So House of M is three words, no more mutants. You know, with those three words, Scarlet Witch upends the X-Men franchise and out of nowhere documents this alternate world series, reducing the mutant population of the Marvel Universe to less than 200 mutants. So in all of the Marvel Universe, all the comics they have, there are less than 200 mutants. And they began a near decade-long race against extinction that finally came to an end back in, are you ready for it? Avengers versus X-Men. It's all kind of tying together. So Wanda Maximoff, the Scarlet Witch, essentially she imposes her telekinetic power onto every human on Earth into believing that mutants are the superior beings. And the entirety of the story is just so brilliant. The way they wrote it, the way it was drawn, the colors, everything. It was just so great. Yeah, it was one of the best series that I have ever read, honestly. And it probably should be like number one or number two. But when I say my number ones and my number two, you're going to go, oh, well, House of M took a consolation prize at being third. It deserves to be further up on the list, but there were a couple that definitely went a little bit further. So again, trade paperbacks, go buy them. these five should be in your collection. If they're not, there's something wrong with you. Pick them up. Do it. Moving along, Infinity Gauntlet is my number two. Now, why would Infinity Gauntlet be number two? What's better than that? We'll get to that. That's not important. But early on in the Infinity Gauntlet, it seemed as if there would be the proverbial monster change. You know, half of humanity is dead, natural disasters that altered the very world that the characters of Marvel had lived in. And everything ends up being reset by the end of the series, which is kind of sucky. The only lasting effects being that the Warlock series could be spun out of the whole entire Infinity Gauntlet series. So Adam Warlock, who's a very big pivotal role to the Infinity Gauntlet, and that story kind of gets shot into the world of, hey, you know, he ends up with his own series, is what I'm trying to say there. My words are not so good. But this was a masterclass. Honestly, Infinity Gauntlet is kind of a masterclass of Marvel in the no change, just the illusion of change. Now, there was a spiritual follow-up, Infinity, and it promised more lasting change. While Thanos and the gems were still a part of the story, which they very much were, the biggest fallout from the event was the unleashing of the Terrigen Mist that unlocked thousands, if not millions, of Inhumans, which is huge. And, you know, the whole idea behind Infinity, which is after Infinity Gauntlet, is now Thanos has decided, I'm going to find my son and kill him. He's hiding somewhere, and he doesn't know he's my son, but I'll find him. And he goes to Atalan, and he says, Black Bolt, you're going to kill every kid who's age 16 to 22. They're dead. Kill them. Execute them. That's the only way. And, you know, there's a great moment where Black Bolt really outsmarts Thanos and essentially destroys Atalan, which was super brilliant. And I'm going on about Infinity more than I was talking about Infinity Gauntlet, and I'm sorry. Infinity and Infinity Gauntlet are just both really great. And like I said, Infinity, which was an event that happened last year, it just, like I said, again, it ushered in this kind of new change where we're going to have more Inhumans, and they launched the Inhuman series. So there's that. But again, Infinity Gauntlet is just an amazing story. It's kind of what is the benchmark, if you will, for the Marvel movies, Avengers Infinity War Part 1 and Infinity War Part 2, which will come out May 18th and 19th of 20, or what was it, May 3rd and 4th of 18 and 19. That's hard to say. So May 18th, or May 4th of 2018 and May 3rd of 2019. So they're literally going to be released in the same year cycle, if you know what I'm saying, like less than one full year apart. It's going to be exciting. I mean, just to see those things happen on screen, and before that's going to happen, we're going to get like Black Panther, The Inhumans, as I was just talking about. You've got Doctor Strange will have come out. The second Guardians will have been out. Another Thor. We're going to have Captain America Civil War. There are so many huge things that are going to be going on in this universe. I'm just so excited to see for the future. But again, Infinity Gauntlet is what is setting the benchmark, and it is kind of the archetype for the movies that Marvel are in the process of releasing. So much so, and people think it's not really a big deal, but there are a shit ton of Easter eggs in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, most specifically in the collector's room. Now, one of the most important things, and James Gunn has even went on to confirm, that Adam Warlock's cocoon is in the collector's room. Now, as we remember, when the Infinity Stone of Power is unleashed, and the, I can't think of what her name is, the slave chick to the collector, when she grabs it and it essentially explodes, it, you know, releases essentially everything that's in the collector's nowhere section. You have to assume that the collector doesn't just have all of his entire collection in one spot. Why would you do that? What if it all got destroyed? Which it kind of did. So there's a lot of rumors flying now that Adam Warlock actually was released from that moment, and that he will be a part of the future cinematic universe. Now, who gets cast as Adam Warlock is remains to be seen, but I think it's going to be kind of a major thing when he has come to light. And who knows, maybe in Phase 4 or 5 or wherever we end up with Marvel, we'll have an Adam Warlock movie. That could be really interesting. I've stalled long enough. It's been nearly 40 minutes of the podcast, and I haven't mentioned my number one. If anyone knows anything about me, I don't even have to say it. I mean, if you don't know, then you suck. So anyways, one last build, because I love it. Excellent. The time is up. Number one on my top five Marvel movie, or movie, shit, my bad, in my top five Marvel comic events is obviously, without question, Marvel Civil War. So, you know, Marvel Civil War, people might ask, how did it change the Marvel Universe? And there was this whole, you know, you work for the government or you're a criminal. So it's like, hey, you either work for criminals or you're a criminal, which I thought was interesting. And now no one gets on with anyone else, you know. It did so much. I mean, the House of M's decimation of mutant kind that had come earlier, and it was kind of like Civil War flipped it on its end and kind of started this new path where are you for registration as a hero, where you need to tell the government what your secret identity is, and they will, quote-unquote, be on your side and protect you. And that felt wrong. It was like, there's so much more you can do as a hero if people don't know who you are. And I think that Peter Parker, and this is why it's so important, and I'm really just fingers and toes crossed that Sony and Marvel have struck a deal and that Spidey will be a part of Cap 3 in some capacity, because he is such a huge, huge part of the Civil War storyline. I mean, he unmasks and says, my name is Peter Parker, and for the last X amount of years of my life, I have been Spider-Man, you know? And it set the whole entire world on end. Now, that creates a different problems. Now you have let the villains who have been trying to figure out your secret identity know who exactly you are. Guess what they can do? If they know who you are, I mean, if you know who I am, you know the people I associate with myself. So then they become a... Oh, what's the word I'm looking for, folks? I can't think of it. They become not a hazard. They become a liability, right? They, my friends and family, if I'm a superhero, become a liability because I'm stopping bad guys. But bad guys don't care. And they want to hurt the good guy. So they're going to do whatever they want. They're going to hunt down my family and my friends and take them all out. That's not cool. And that was kind of the problem with Civil War. It was like, Tony Stark, excuse me, sir, but, Mr. Stark, sir, why the fuck would we do that? It doesn't make any sense. So, you know, there was a lot of change, and then, you know, there was a lot of big change. I mean, Cap dies. We had heroes and villains fighting alongside of each other again. Norman Osborn, he heads up the Thunderbolts, I do believe. A sector of the Thunderbolts, and starts his own team, his own superhero team, was it the Dark Avengers? I don't remember which one it was, but he was Iron Patriot, and I'm still to this day kind of pissed off that Iron Man 3, I'm really pissed off that Iron Man 3 had War Machine in Iron Patriot's colors. I get it, you're trying to sell a fucking toy. I get it, you're trying to sell a pop vinyl. I get it, you're trying to sell this and that because it looks cool. I also get that the only way they could have had him at that time was to put him in that movie in those colors and say it's Rhodey, and that's just what they're going to call him, because Norman Osborn belongs to Sony. Fuck that. You know, I wish Sony would understand, man, and I wish Fox would do the same thing. It's like, I just saw... going on a little bit of a tangent here, I just saw that someone posted that they know the story and they are someone close to the source that has seen the finished product of Fantastic Four. The movie's complete. We still don't have a trailer. Does that tell you how bad it is? Here's how bad it is. Fox is furious. That's why they pushed the release date. This movie will never see the light of day. You have so many comic book fans. And, you know, I don't care if you're Marvel, I don't care if you're DC, the first comic book team, real team that meant something was the Fantastic Four. All eyes should be on how great this movie could be if it's done right. And Fox fumbled again. again and again and again, all these people are making all these poor decisions. All I want is for Marvel to just sweep all their characters back up, pay the money, and do it right. How amazing would it be to see Amazing Spider-Man by Marvel? How great would it be to see the Fantastic Four, the team that launched Marvel into its ultra stardom and success, on the big screen as a Marvel movie, a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where they make the calls. They decide what the story and the history of Victor Von Doom and Reed Richards and Susan Richards and Johnny Storm and, you know, Ben Grimm is the thing. They decide what it's like. Not this bullshit where they send him to some alternate universe and Doom is a hacker. Bogus. And actually, I heard a rumor that Doom, allegedly, in the Fantastic Four movie, Doom is a guy that actually works for Reed Richards and then turns on him. That's so stupid. They were colleagues, for Christ's sake. There's so much change. There's so many things that are just wrong. Like, what are you thinking? Fox, you're fucking it up. You make me scared to even want to think about seeing any of your other movies. You did great with Future Past, and then... I'm going on a tangent, folks. Anyways, back to the thing. Civil War is amazing. It is definitely the penultimate of my favorite Marvel events. I'm going to do a... Probably at some point, I have to read a lot more of them, though. Or I could do a blind one where I just talk about what people suggest are the best ones. But I really need to get into further into DC. To be quite honest, like I said, for the longest time, I've only read Batman titles. With how great the Flash television show is, I'm hoping that if I get some Flash comics, they're really good. If they suck, I'm going to be kind of pissed, you know? So one final thing before I go here. Marvel recently also announced they're doing something called the True Believers Number Ones. They're going to take any important Marvel story, any important Marvel comic that was a number one, i.e. Infinity Gauntlet number one, Civil War number one, probably The Amazing Spider-Man number one, Fantastic Four number one, all these big titles that are important, they're going to choose which ones. And this year, you'll be able to get reprints of the number ones for $1. How cool is that? I mean, it's pretty much stolen from Image, because Image did the Image First's number one. But, hey, Marvel, finally taking a page out of someone else's book to kind of further your brand, I think it's a really smart move. The importance of the True Believers, honestly, to me, the reason they're doing this over anything, because the two titles that they spoke most of being part of this were Civil War and Infinity Gauntlet, which are the next Avengers movie after Age of Ultron, and the next Captain America movie after Age of Ultron. They're getting people who have not been a part of the series that they've now picked up from how great all their other movies were. They're saying, hey, here's where you can read the original story. And I think that's really great of them. So we're going to go ahead and just, you know, wrap things up for tonight. It was a pretty on-point episode. I don't think I tangent too much. I said fuck way too much.
Fatality.
I did really good there. Let's see. Here's my favorite one.
Now, say my name.
Heisenberg. You know, now one last thing I want to mention. It is very important that I say this. Y'all know I'm a pop vinyl collector, and if you don't know what a pop vinyl is, look them up. They're really cool. Now, I've got a pretty impressive collection with some of the rarest pop vinyls that exist, and I just started collecting the Breaking Bad pop vinyls, and I have 3 of the 10. I've got to keep moving on and get all of them and track them down. And there's like 3 different Walter Whites. One of them's Heisenberg, one in the hazmat suit, one in his greenish shirt and the underwear. There's 2 Jessies. There's a Hank. There's a Mike. There's 2 different Gus. I think that might be it. Maybe there's one more. Oh, there's Saul Goodman. Obviously, Better Call Saul. That's coming soon. So what I would say is look out in the next months, as Brandon and I are probably going to be preparing to do a Breaking Bad retrospective that we are going to premiere before Better Call Saul. Just as a look back at one of the best shows that has ever come out, Breaking Bad was a revolutionary series. If you have not seen it, you really are missing out on something. I know there are some people that, I couldn't get past episode 2 or 3. Fucking power through, because after the first three quarters of the first season, which is only seven episodes. The first season, seven episodes. Once you're at the end of season one, you won't want to stop. It's like crack. It's like meth. You're addicted to meth. That's what it is. The blue stuff. You're addicted to the blue stuff. Okay? So, watch it. Watch it, watch it, watch it. You'll love it. But one thing I'm going to do before we do that, maybe, hopefully, I just watched it a second run through. We're probably going to watch it for a third. I'm going to watch it for a third time, and I'm going to compile a count of every person who's in the show and every person that that person kills. So if you killed someone in Breaking Bad, and I don't mean, like, for example, Walt telling Jesse to kill... Oh, spoiler alert. Walt tells Jesse to kill someone. That's all I'll say. That doesn't count. Because, I mean, Jesse has a murder on his hands. He's the one that pulled the trigger. However, that is not on Walt. Maybe it's an assist. We'll call it assist. Maybe I'll have assists. Hell, I don't know. Anyways, I'm going to be doing this count and try to find out who murdered the most people. You know, was it, you know, it could have been anybody. I mean, there were so many different people that had kills. You think you might know. Maybe it's Jesse. Maybe it's Walt. Maybe it's Hank. It can't be Hank. Maybe it is Hank. Maybe it's Gomi. It's not Gomi. It's definitely not Skyler. She didn't have the most kills. Maybe it's Gus. We don't know. Anyways, I just wanted to tell everybody, enjoy it. 2015 is going to be a great year. I am so excited to see the future of this show, to see where we blossom, to see where we go. I am glad that you've been on this journey with us so far. Ladies and gentlemen, I do believe I'm wrapping up episode 31 right now. It is the 18th of January, 2015, as I'm recording. Maybe this is in the future. Maybe this is May 2nd of 2015 or July 14th of 2016. And you're just now getting to the show. Whenever it is, I'm glad you're listening. We love to know that people are listening to what we have to say. We know that you could be spending your evening doing a multitude of other things, playing video games, reading comics, watching movies, enjoying families, getting BJs, going down on chicks, whatever it is that you're into, you could be doing it, but you're spending your time with us, and we appreciate that. Colonel. Anyways, I had to take a call there real quick. I just want to say, you guys are the best. And you're why we do this. If you're listening to this, I want to say thank you. Shout outs to everyone. If I know you and I talk to you in any capacity, you're part of the reason I drive myself to be good on this show. So this, ladies and gentlemen, was episode 31. I don't have a title. Titleless. Message for you, sir.
Message for you, sir.
Oh, I love it. It's so great. Anyways, okay.
Thwarpa time!
I did that one again. There's so many buttons to hit. Okay, I'm done fucking around. I've probably wasted 2 minutes on a closer. I didn't know how to close the show. I just really wanted to just tell everyone how awesome you've all been. Look for us in 2015. Like us on Facebook at Journey into Comics Podcast. That just go to Facebook, facebook.com/Journey into Comics Podcast. We couldn't take Journey into Comics because that actually is some very small, unknown comic shop in Ohio, I think. It's got like 100 likes or something. Nothing against them. I'm sure they're just probably in a region that doesn't get a lot of traffic, but, you know, we're Journey into Comics Podcast. We're the podcast. We had to let people know that we are a podcast. So, this is the Journey into Comics Podcast. Thank you for listening. Oh, and my name's Nate, your host. Oh, and Brandon's not here because this is a Nate cast. So anyways, ladies and gentlemen, I'm your host, Nate Phillips. Thank you for listening, and until next time, America.